If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
I was the property manager, maintenance coordinator, leasing agent, and sometimes the maintenance guy when I owned just one 7-unit building. And it's like, well, I'm at home with the kid, so I'm not going to pay somebody to go do this. Like, I'll drag my 2-year-old with me, and we'll go do maintenance, or we'll go paint a vacant unit or something like that. So that was, you know, that was where I was at.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Colin Douthat owns Atlas Property Management and Atlas Construction. In his first 18 months in real estate, he was able to acquire ownership in 65 doors while self-managing them. This led him to start a property management company, Atlas Property Management, which currently manages over 700 units and is adding 75 to 100 units per month. Atlas Construction, which was founded in 2020, will do over $2 million in rehab this year. He has 3 engineering degrees, which led him to a career as a professional engineer, and after realizing that engineering wasn't for him, he made the decision to leave the corporate world after 7 years and start investing in real estate. Today, when he's not helping clients with their buy and hold investments, he enjoys helping others through sharing his faith, being a good husband, and father of 2. Colin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
Oh man, this is great. Now, you're based in Kansas City, and I think you've really scaled your company. So I'm excited to jump in today. But the same questions I ask everybody who comes on is, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Okay. Quick background. Professionally, I'm an engineer by trade, 2 undergrad engineering degrees, master's, professional engineering license. So I was a corporate employee for a number of years, started really reading and enjoying the thought about real estate. And I was like, paradigm shift for me. You know, my kind of thing is like, I got in the gateway drug of real estate. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
I've heard it called the Purple Bible. I've heard it called all sorts of things, but not the gateway drug to real estate.
Yeah, that's what it was for me, because I started jonesing for it. I did that. And I was like, okay, I'm going to buy my first piece of real estate. So got under contract on a 7-unit apartment building. I live in the Kansas City area. Well, our office is in Kansas City. I live in a rural town of about 5,000 people. Driving through town, somebody put a for sale by owner sign in front of a 7-unit apartment building. So I got under contract for it. Then I got fired. Turns out I'm a better entrepreneur than I am employee, which I'm totally okay with at this point in my life. And that was really what got me into real estate. Started scaling my own holdings over the next 18 to 24 months. Got up to between what I owned and what I owned with partners, about 60 to 70 units. And I was like, I really need some help managing this. Maybe I should bring on my own property manager. Maybe we could start a company. So started, digging into starting a property management company. Really liked it. So we started in 2019 with kind of my own units. Started working with investors. Added, a few units in 2019. Started 2020 with about 125 doors. Ended 2020 with about 650. up to 680 right now at the end of the first month of 21. And our pipeline by April 1st is showing us over 1,000 doors under management.
Holy smokes. So you 5X'd last year.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So.
Yeah. Okay. We've got lots to dig into here.
Oh, and then in 2020, I started a construction company as well.
This is great. Okay. So let's go back a little bit. You got fired, right? And it sounds like that was a blessing, oddly in disguise, because it launched you into real estate. Like, how did you fund, and then how did you have the ability to keep going out and buying and scaling at a time when most lenders and other people are probably looking at you going, Colin, you don't have a job, do you?
Yeah. So, I used those last couple of pay stubs as long as I could for the lending.
And didn't bother to tell them.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't going to tell them that. I did have a couple, I did have some money set aside. My father had passed a few years ago. So, had about 100 to start with there. That's kind of what fueled it all. And then through partnerships and begging, borrowing, and stealing from family to fund down payments and owner financing and other financing avenues, we were able to get across the finish line, bring in some partners and stuff like that.
Who helped you figure out what those partnerships should look like?
Me. Nobody. I really came into this with no mentors. I didn't have any connections in the real estate industry. I wasn't going to meetups. I was just reading books and listening to podcasts.
Man, that, wow.
Some of it was 50-50. It was like, hey, we'll take, you know, me and a buddy, we'll go 50-50. And we're up to about 22 doors that we own together. And, you know, hey, we need some down payment. All right, well, hey, mom, I'll give you 8% interest only if you, you know, lend us the money for the down payment. And, you know, just started working through it that way.
Right. So you get up to 60 doors. Those sorts of creative financing, especially if each one's slightly different than the next, can be a lot, even just, you know, paperwork wise to keep up with and remember who you owe who and what that deal structure is.
It's a thing to try to remember it all. And, you know, now that we've gotten to the point where we've got some scale, we're reconsolidating some of that debt into better terms, longer term, you know, cash out or construction loans on some of the packages and portfolios to simplify it all, because it is a lot.
Right. Yeah, I can only imagine. So you've moved to a more consistent model, maybe as far as what terms, because you can set the terms a little bit better now that you know what you need.
Yeah, and now that we're more connected, I can also shop it better. But I'm not aggressive in my buying right now, not for lack of belief in the asset, but just because we 4 or 5x our business last year, and, you know, we're on track to more than double it this year. So, you know, that's been consuming a lot of my attention. So some deals will trickle in and we'll work to get those done on the side. But my main focus right now is taking care of my investors and helping them analyze deals. Or if I hear about something that I know I'm not going to, you know, syndicate this 50 unit apartment building, that I'll pass it off to them and let them have that opportunity.
Right. That's interesting. What's your mix of single family to multifamily properties that you manage?
I'd say we're 85% multifamily at this point.
Okay. That's really interesting. What's the size of, what would you say the average size is, like number of doors?
Probably going to be 15 to 20.
Okay.
Now we've got our current largest one is 62. You know, we've got another one that's in the 50s. We're getting ready to take out, and we've got a 48 unit that's being owned by the same syndicator, and they're getting ready to close on a 123 unit building. They share the same parking lot. So it's effectively a 171 unit complex. We're getting ready to take that on.
Right. No, that's awesome. That's awesome. And that 15 to 20 door management space is one that's probably overlooked, I would think.
Yeah, it may be. You know, there's some smaller firms that, even sizable firms that have a lot of doors that just want to focus on single family. And then there are some of the larger firms that are like, we'll put somebody on site, we'll charge you salary plus a fee. And, you know, that's, you know, I'm charging 60, 80 grand a year in salary plus a 4% fee. And, you know, we're more in that, okay, yeah, we've got a centralized office. Our staff's used to handling that. Not a big deal.
Right.
You know, sets of fourplexes or a long row of duplexes, or, you know, even some buildings that are, you know, we've got one building that's 34 units, just stuff like that.
Right. No, that's interesting. Yeah, I would think on the property management side, you're either going to have your institutional, like you said, they're going to stick somebody on site and charge you their salary plus a fee, or they're just going to be too big to handle this kind of middle market, you know, 15, 20 doors.
We have somebody on site but we have a lot of concentration in one area. So she kind of handles that. And then with this 171 units that we're getting ready to cut, you know, we've already got 48, the other parts coming, we're going to put somebody on site on the big building there.
Sure. That makes sense. There's scale there that would justify that. That's really cool. Let's talk about, what do you bring into the market that people are using you guys for as property managers? Like how did you find your niche in that?
I mean, one thing is, you know, we're getting a lot of really great referrals from investors and agents. So that's really driven a lot of our growth. Additionally, most investors in this market are out of state. So, you know, we're very used to working with out-of-state investors, but most investors are also looking to do value add through forced appreciation, through increasing the performance of the property financially, and or doing construction to bring the property up. Well, we have in-house construction. I have a partner now that I went to college with, also an engineer, construction background. He runs the construction operations. I run the property management side. So a lot of people that bring us in, they're like, hey, we want to spend $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 a unit to get these units, you know, take them up $150 a month. And so we come in and we have that all in-house. It's, you know, the vertical integration there. So It's one point of contact for them that makes it easy. Plus, it's a smooth transition when construction gets done rehabbing a unit. It rolls right into us for management.
Sure, sure. What are some challenges you've run into as you guys have grown and scaled, especially maybe, you know, looking back over the last year, 5X growth is you know, soon you're going to be bald like me if you don't have good systems in place. So what have you guys done in that regard?
You know, worked to create systems. Our property management supervisor, her 2021 goal, and we're, you know, working on that right now, is document every step in the process. You know, give us the book, you know, that we can all operate off of, or all the teams can operate off of. And then, you know, staffing, that's kind of the easy one to say, yeah, we need more help within the staffing department, finding good people that don't bring a bunch of baggage to the company to help with the PM side and staff up the maintenance side and staff up our construction crews. You know, we're always hiring.
Right, right. That's interesting. Yeah, in an economy where people say there's no jobs, and yet there you are with your sign out saying now hiring. Let's talk about some high level stuff.
Okay.
Like when it comes to, you know, kind of how, I know you kind of fell into this and it was just like a natural progression for you,
mm-hmm.
but was there ever a point in time when you had to change your thinking about something or really work on your mindset as you grew?
Yeah. Starting to go through the process of delegating the responsibilities that I was holding as my job, right? I was the property manager, maintenance coordinator, leasing agent, and sometimes the maintenance guy when I owned just one 7-unit building. And it's like, well, I'm at home with the kid, so I'm not going to pay somebody to go do this. Like, I'll drag my 2-year-old with me, and we'll go do maintenance, or we'll go paint a vacant unit, or something like that. So that was, you know, that was where I was at, you know. So yeah, okay, now we're at this. Okay, then we brought on the first property manager. Okay, you're responsible for talking to the tenants. Okay, now we have a leasing agent. You do all the showings, right? Now I had to train the property manager because she didn't have experience, but she did a great job based upon her skills from her previous careers. But the leasing agent, she already knew what she was doing because she came from another PM firm. So it's like, she hits the ground running. So great, I'm not doing the leasing, and now I'm not doing that. Okay, now she's a PM supervisor. Okay, all the property managers now report to you. So just delegating those responsibilities. Hey, you're now responsible for processing owner distributions on a monthly basis. So that's been the biggest mindset for me is, and it's, everybody says it's kind of the cliche, right? Is work on the business, not in the business. So getting to the point where I was working on the business was a big step for me.
Right. And that's a tough one, man, because a lot of us get stuck in that middle ground where we go, gosh, like, yeah, I can do this. I can go, you know, like you said, I got a 7-unit building and something's wrong. So, I can do that faster and get it repaired and off the books before or off our plate long before I can get somebody else out there to do it.
Yeah.
So why not? But then that just becomes a vicious cycle.
Yeah. And then scale starts to necessitate that you can't do it all anymore.
I want to hear more on that because that's how did you get over that hump? Because there is a hump there where you go, okay, I have to have enough revenue coming in to justify hiring the property manager, to justify hiring the leasing agent. And yet at the same time, I have to build that revenue without doing all the things every day that take away from my ability to build that greater revenue stream.
Yeah. So with growth, in my opinion, I am not a business expert. I haven't written books, but you know, with my growth and experience, there are two kind of routes, right? You can grow until you're working 20 hours a day and then bring somebody in to take something off your plate. Or you say, I see what's coming. I'm going to continue to grow. I'm going to hire for that position. So my first 2 to 3 hires was, oh crap, I can't do anymore. I'm overloaded. I'm starting to drop balls or not do the best that I can do. Now we're saying, now we're looking at our pipeline and saying, what are our needs going to be in 4 weeks, in 4 months, and trying to hire up so we don't overwork our current staff. Because we want to, now that I'm not the one managing the properties, I don't want to take my property managers and put 50% more doors on their plate for 6 months just because I don't want to pay for the staff, right? I'm going to choose to run a leaner company until we have a moment of stabilization, and then we can optimize unit count and workloads for everybody so that we're maintaining the margins that we want to maintain.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. It's a very forward as opposed to looking, you know, back or looking at now, you look forward.
Yeah, it's trying to be more proactive and less reactive, but you're right. We now have the cash flow that we can support possibly some underutilization of our employees. Not what we want to do long term, but to avoid us having a slip in our performance as a whole, that's where we need to be.
Right. Man, that's great. So you guys are both owners and managers, though.
Yeah, so I own and I manage.
Right. And so is everything you guys do in the Kansas City market?
Yeah, so we say it's about a one-hour radius from our office, you know, which takes us to Lawrence, Kansas, which is where University of Kansas is. It takes us east a ways and up north to some tertiary markets like that. Man down south. Yeah.
That's cool. Talk to us about your construction company. What spurred, I mean, obviously there's a need, so we know what spurred, you know, you to start that, but how did that formation come about? And then what was that like growing that, especially bringing it in-house?
Yeah. So I never really outsourced construction at any point.
Okay.
I would do some unit rehabs early on. Then I kind of brought on a buddy and said, hey, he was out of work. And I said, hey, well, let's come paint some units. And it kind of naturally grew into our maintenance department, which then kind of started to become construction. Then I started trying to take on some construction projects myself because I have a construction background as a project manager. And we were trying to grow and I was trying to do sales and I was trying to manage everything and manage properties and do the books and everything like that. And it was just my project management on construction was falling flat. My estimates weren't right. And I was like, maybe this is why I got fired from being a project manager. I don't know. But, you know, looking back, maybe I just wasn't the best at that. So my partner, Adam, and I, we both went to engineering school together. We played football together in college. So I had known him for 15 years at the time. I knew I could trust him. I tried a foray with another partner and it didn't really work. And so early in 2020, I said, Adam, I know you've got the entrepreneurial bug like I do. You're good at managing projects. You've managed international projects successfully for big, you know, $100 million projects. I was like, this is what I need right now. Here's the sales and the pipeline I'm developing because we were selling this as all in-house anyway. So I've got a great pipeline. Come help me execute this. Let's join forces. And from there, it really just took off.
Yeah, that's really cool. So you were able to find someone that was better skilled at it than you were.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And so if you follow EOS or any of those sort of things like that, in EOS, there's a visionary and there's the integrator, right? So I'm very much a high visionary and he was a high integrator. So it was very much a yin and a yang. I was like, listen, I'll sell it. I have the vision for where the company is going to be, right? We're going to be vertically integrated. We're going to provide this service to out-of-state investors and local investors. Just happens most of them are out-of-state to make their life easier to go through value add on multifamily or if they want to do a BRRRR. And we'll do the work. You just help make it run smoothly. And that's kind of our compliments.
Man, that's awesome. Yeah, partnerships like that are invaluable.
Yeah.
Let's jump into the final four. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
If you're going to do value add on a property, make sure you take out a construction loan and then add 15%.
Right. I love that. That's practical. That's practical. Add 15%. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I need to get my pencil sharper because I find that 15 is probably not enough for my construction projects.
Find the good contractor that gives you hard bid.
Right. Very good. I need to write that one down too. Hey, number two is what is one thing you are currently doing to stay on top of your game?
Audible, reading books and, you know, just trying to increase my business knowledge, property management knowledge, leadership knowledge, whatever it is.
That's awesome. When it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
My wife and my family and some of our employees were really involved in our church. So I help lead the youth.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Do you deal with junior hires every day?
I really try to stick just to the high schoolers.
Good for you. That's a tough age group. So I'm going to say you really are a saint if you're leading the junior hires. So good for you.
Oh, yeah. They're tough.
They're tough, man. That's great. Well, we were all one once, so
yep.
That's the way it is. Colin, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do we do that?
Website, www.atlas.rentals. Really, they can also find me well at LinkedIn, Colin Douthit. Shoot me a genuine message. Don't make it a copy and paste form message.
Right. Those get put in the trash pile. Colin, thanks so much for your time, man. This was great. Certainly appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you, Sam. I enjoyed it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.